friends, I'm Maddie, and I serve as a young adult pastor in St. Louis.
And I'm Reebs, and I serve as a college ministry director in Columbia.
And we're the Oh God Podcast.
We are a faith podcast that seeks to create community and dialogue for people who are deconstructing and reconstructing their faith, people who are dealing with religious trauma or just a lot of questions that they feel like they don't get answered within the walls of church. So we are a place where people can come to process and ask questions and learn and try to seek a way to build community in a way that feels more sustainable.
So if you're here, welcome to a faith community that redefines faith in a world that isn't as definitive as the church can often make it seem.
Yay!
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah, because I think, wait, this is on Thanksgiving, correct?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Okay, happy Thanksgiving. Wow, we record these like in advance. So past Reeb says hello. Thanks. Welcome for Thanksgiving.
Also, it is now November, and I have this thing in November where I just immediately start craving Thanksgiving food as soon as November 1st hits. And I really don't eat it any other time of the year. Like, I'm not a big, like, full turkey person. Mac and cheese, obviously. Green bean casserole, obviously, I'll eat those, like, all the time. But other than that, like, I don't usually crave Thanksgiving dinner, and it's all I want until Thanksgiving.
Yes, I totally agree. I love Thanksgiving food, but I also don't eat meat, so I feel like I live for all of the sides. Like, I love like stuffing, green bean casserole, any type of mac and cheese, cranberry sauce. My grandma used to make that weird, you know, that like it's like a gelatin, like ambrosia. Jello. It's like a Jello salad. Oh,
with
hello.
Marshmallows.
I'm looking at you like through the mirror. Hi. But yeah, that marshmallow, that weird like marshmallow fruit
and
Jello
it's called
salad.
Ambrosia.
Ambrosia. Okay. Yes.
My grandma eats it with everything. I don't like it. And every really? Time she's like, you okay. have to eat it. And I suffer through it.
I only like specifically the recipe that we used to have at my grandma's Thanksgiving. I've tried other ones at like church potlucks and not a big fan. But I like the one that like I grew up on. And that's about it.
Yeah. Well, in the spirit of Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And as we sit here and dream of the foods that we could eat, we are super thankful for you. And
yes.
we have been having conversations because we're coming up on 1 year of the podcast.
Ooh, ooh.
And like all of these things that we'll talk about in a minute. But we just want to take a minute to thank literally every person
yes.
who has signed up on Patreon to sponsor the show.
Yes, because we are so, so, so thankful. We truly, like literally could not do this without the
it
support
would not exist.
Of yeah. Patreon members. So we just really quickly want to like do a shout out of all of our patrons. So thank you to Logan, Emma, Hannah, Carter, Kaylin, Alicia, Hank, Nicholas, Emily, Christina, Ashton, Drew, Marissa, Bailey, Jules, Courtney, Anna, Paper, and Christina. We are so, so, so thankful. Woo!
We love you so much. And truly, like the entire, I mean, as we reflected on this last year and kind of things that we hope to see happen and things that we hope to see evolve, like where we started to where we are now, we could not have imagined that this would have been a thing.
No, yeah.
And so it's been really, really fun to do this mm-hmm. with you and to get to partner with you in forming out what this show is and what this community looks like and what it could be in the future. And so thank you. And if you're not a patron, thank you for listening, because
yes.
your listening is what makes all of this possible as
yes,
well.
Yes, absolutely.
And your input helps us to figure out how to continuously make this a resource that is valuable to you. And we just really, really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, we are so, I mean, truly, yeah, from where we started to where we are, would not have imagined this many people like craved a community or space or felt like this was a valuable like asset within their lives. So thank you to everyone who's out there, because it's crazy. This is like our last episode before like our 1 year anniversary,
which is bananas. And so if you're curious, like if you're like, you know, I've been listening for a year, I might want to join Patreon. What is Patreon? Just to let you know, like all of the funds that we raise through the different things and the tiers and offerings we have on Patreon goes towards making the show happen. Like we don't take any money home. It keeps the website up.
No, we do not like, take any money home.
Not at all. It helps us make sure that we can support financially people who have like helped us along the way. We can buy new mics. We can get proper equipment. We're in the process of trying to figure out how to expand what we offer, which costs money for us to be able mm-hmm. to do that, right? So like, I just moved to St. Louis, so now we're looking to get a couple of pieces of equipment to help us record remotely, mm-hmm. like different things like that. But that's what it goes to. And so we just want to offer you like the best content possible. And Patreon makes that possible for us to do. So thank you for supporting. And because we're coming up on 1 year, we've got a lot of really cool stuff that we're gearing up for. We are planning for a really massive 1 year giveaway. So if you don't follow us on Instagram, you should definitely do that. Yes,
go follow us at Oh God Pod.
And we've got some stuff in the works. One of the goals we set when we started the show was finding ways to continuously tweak it and improve it so that it met the needs of the people listening. And we have been taking in a bunch of feedback and have some ideas of cool stuff that we can hopefully make happen. And all of that is going to be possible by you listening along and continuing to follow
us. Yeah, we are so, so, so excited. It has been a very like crazy year, I feel like, personally for both of us. And so especially like the past couple months have just been like really draining and exhausting. And we've had so much chaotic things like happening in life that we've not been able to like devote a ton of time. But like today we had just like a really good, I feel like for the both, like for the first time in a while, we both were like, oh my gosh, I finally have creative ideas again for the podcast. Right. 'Cause for a while we were kind of just like doing the sustain, like the things that we needed to do to sustain it. But, yeah, it's just nice to be in a place where we're like energized again and like have, ideas because we've been in such like crazy, I mean, there's just been a lot happening like personally that we haven't been able to devote to it. So we're just really excited for everything that's going to come. And it's exciting. That's been an entire year.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I think that also speaks a lot to just like life, like anything that you're doing. Right. Yeah. 'Cause one of the spots that I was reflecting on earlier that I was thankful for is the persistence in the midst of all this, like just craziness in life, because both of us find so much value in operating this platform. And we also know how much impact it can have on someone else who is listening along. And yet, like, life happens and you have to figure out how to continue to remain resilient and trying to make things happen.
Yes.
And it is because we have made so many friends doing this that I think both of us were able to sit down and be like, okay, no, we actually really need to recenter. And that ebb and flow has been a really great learning curve too. So
absolutely. Because we truly are learning all of this as we go.
We're building the plane as we're flying. We don't know what's going on.
We appreciate everyone's patience and just support and overwhelming, like, just support, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys rock.
Incredible. Wow. Okay. So today, since this episode is on Thanksgiving, we wanted to spend some time talking about ways that we can re-indigenize and decolonize the way that we talk about Thanksgiving and the way that like we do this holiday, which can have such a wide range of complex and positive emotions for some and negative emotions for others. Like this holiday carries a lot of baggage. So ways that we can talk about like, okay, what does this holiday mean? What should we release? What can we reimagine? And just the nitty gritty of the history of how we got to a place where we have honestly a lot of like nationalist mythology around Thanksgiving, how like the story we tell really isn't at all like the history.
Yeah. And how that bleeds into our church experience on this, this weekend, what that looks like. When we talk about thankfulness in a Western church context,
absolutely,
like our understanding of thankfulness is really shaped by this holiday. And this holiday is really shaped by a lot of historical context that isn't wonderful, to put very lightly.
Yeah.
So I think having that conversation, knowing what that looks like, and then thinking about how we can approach the day from a much more genuinely loving, thankful, inclusive kind of space can be really fruitful to our spiritual journey. So
yeah, awesome. So in this conversation, I found a lot of really good like blog posts and resources from Indigenous and Native voices that I'll make sure that we have all of those links up on the website. So I highly urge, there were also a lot of things I read that we're not necessarily going to be able to include in like this episode, but I just want to make sure that those resources are there for people who are wanting to like learn more and dive a little bit deeper. But one thing I found a lot of was like really great ways, that we can re-indigenize, but also like addressing some of the harm, like how the way the Thanksgiving narrative is right now is harmful. So there are currently like the way that we discuss Thanksgiving promotes erasure, decentering, and oppression, because we essentially like we're erasing, we're labeling all like First Nation people as sort of the sidekicks of this story, in a fake story that like didn't actually happen. But like in the story that we tell, we paint the like all Indigenous peoples as the sidekicks of the story,
right
who just kind of like come along and like bring some food, and then they all like eat together, but really the pilgrims, like it's their like big first Thanksgiving.
Very Charlie Brown Thanksgiving energy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so like how that erasure of like only talking about Native peoples as being like the sidekicks, or sort of like, you know, what's the word,
the accompanying characters, even.
Yeah, it's just being literally erased from the narrative.
Also just totally throwing off the narrative too, right? Like I remember the way that we teach Thanksgiving in school, but also in church, like in Sunday school and stuff too, it is all revolved around thankfulness, which is fine, but thankfulness for what, you know? Because a lot of the conversation that is had about the very real implications of what happened in this season to Indigenous people is not really something to be super cheery about. Mm-mm. And like the turkey hand craft is great, but doesn't really teach you what it means to live out in a more justice-centered way, like celebrating this day.
Yes, absolutely. If you celebrate it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it also like decenters. I read like a few articles about how there was one of a woman who is from a tribe that is in Alaska, and how like the modern Thanksgiving story focuses very explicitly on like you know, obviously like the East Coast, like where the pilgrims landed, but how growing up as a Native person in Alaska, and with the Thanksgiving story being the primary way that everyone learns about like Native history, and that's essentially like where most people draw the line, it might be your first and only time learning about like Native and Indigenous peoples. And so how growing up as like a person in Alaska, how she felt like her tribe wasn't truly like represented, because we're only centering on like very specific like stories and like erasing a lot of like the main details.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like really interesting, because a lot of times we also loop all Native people into like, you know, like one idea, when there were like so many different like confederations and iterations and cultural expressions. So how like, you know, sort of just like viewing the complexity and like the beauty of all the different cultures instead of lumping it into this one, like this is all Native. Yeah.
Which is also just the inherent, one of the many inherent curses of colonization, right? That when you, and it's part of, it's one way I think to even go about talking about the conversation of like decentering whiteness, because like whiteness as a label is always the baseline. Right. And it is always the most bland. Like you take away everything that makes a person uniquely their own, right? Culture, identity, and force them to assimilate to this one kind of way of being, and that is whiteness. And so even when you're trying to actively take a day and decenter entire Indigenous communities, you almost have to make them one thing that you are then pushing to the side.
Right.
It is like one step in the like the process of stripping away that identity. And you see this like across the board in so many different spaces, which is why the conversation around decolonization is super important. Because yeah, you take a community and make them one specific thing, and you lose all of the beautiful uniqueness, and then you just continue to push it out.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a lot of stereotyping and overgeneralizing. And so also oppression, just through this idea of like America is first and foremost this European descendant Christian nation above all, which that narrative then pushes anyone who's non-European descendant, non-Christian, just completely out of the narrative, and leads to a lot of just like internalized idea of like this nation was built on like pilgrims, and that pilgrims and indigenous peoples like got along, and that it was this like okay thing that we just came and started this like cheery thing to celebrate like being here. So just a lot of internalized oppression, because it's pushing this narrative that of this false narrative of being a European Christian nation, and right. There was nothing else before that.
Right.
Yeah. Sweet. So we want to talk a little bit about the like true history of Thanksgiving. And one thing, so I'm going to link a YouTube video that was like pretty concise in its, it laid out like really good. I listened to a few podcasts and things like that, but there was this one YouTube video that kind of boils a lot of the like overview facts into one like 15, 20 minute video, which was super helpful. But I think one thing that we really do not think about at all is, how populated the like Americas were before pilgrims came.
Yeah.
Like there was an like a very vibrant trading system between Europe and like tribes, but Europe was never able to colonize because it was too populated. Like there was just in like that sort of northeastern like strip, there was over 100,000 like native peoples. And so even if they had wanted to colonize, they couldn't. It wasn't until, like the relationship between Europe and like native, people started to sour because like Europeans started to like kidnap and forcibly sell, native people into slavery, mm-hmm. and then introducing like a genocide through, what was it? Smallpox?
Yeah. Disease.
Yeah. But then also through introducing disease and causing nearly 90% of the indigenous population to die within the span of 3 years, which like that's
insane.
Is insane.
And that's like beyond, I mean, even coming out of a pandemic and seeing the magnitude of that,
yeah,
still hard to wrap your mind yeah. around, because it's true, like there were such expansive communities,
yeah,
and metropolitan areas and infrastructure and all of these things that already existed here, that, and really not even just in like the Western world, but across world history, like the only history we focus on is like white European right. history. And we never talk about any of the other communities no. that were far beyond evolved compared to the stuff that we celebrate as like cool history today. And the native communities in North America are the exact same way. Like there's some really beautiful history and some really incredible systems that we could learn so much from that existed before Europe got here.
Right. But we just totally gloss over all of that mm-hmm. history. Like I'm embarrassed to admit that like I didn't realize how heavily populated
yeah.
like that North America was until like I was doing a lot of research for this. Like I knew that there had been like a lot of genocide and like disease that wiped out most of the indigenous population, but I didn't know the magnitude of it until mm-hmm. like researching. So, I mean, but just because I was taught a lot of that white history, like I could probably count on one hand the number of days I spent learning about native history in like elementary school, yeah. right? Like it just wasn't, it was totally erased, mm-hmm. And boiled down to like, you know, a few stories. Yeah, about 90% of the population was wiped out in 3 years. And at this same time over in Europe, because of the Protestant Reformation, there was this group of people that called themselves separatists, and like other people kind of called them separatists. And they were so disliked by King James that they ended up kind of getting like run out of England. They ended up leaving because they were being pretty heavily persecuted. Mm-hmm. They ended up going to Holland and were there for a little bit while, but then they started to really fear what the Dutch influence would do to like their children. So then I know
those Dutch,
right? Yeah. And so they really like were heavy on this idea of like biblical literalism and kind of being separate. They were very unhappy with the way that like their church was being run in England. And so they ended up leaving Holland and going to the Americas. They decided, you know, if they went to the Americas, they could kind of start over, be in their own little bubble and not have any other really people to kind of bother them, honestly. Mm-hmm. So they ended up getting a charter and going over. And that is sort of, you know, where we get the Mayflower. The pilgrims ended up coming over, and their journey took way longer than expected. It took them like 2 months longer than they were expecting, and they didn't have nearly enough food. They end up landing in the Americas about November, but they land in the wrong place. They land way too far north, so they end up stealing some food from native peoples. They get back on the ship, and then they land in like the Plymouth area that we now, you know, sort of consider like
Plymouth Rock or
yeah
whatever.
Yeah, like Plymouth Rock, where they like the Pilgrims landed. But they landed in December, which,
oh god,
that's like the Northeast United States, which is very cold, and I would have imagined pretty snowy at that point already. Not an ideal time to start farming or anything. Another thing that I thought was super funny is King James granted them the charter under the condition that they would fish and then sell those profits to like help pay for like the charter and like send some of those profits over to England. So it was going to be like a, you know, they send some of that money back over. But none of them knew how to fish. They didn't know how to fish. And so they get there and like the understandings of their charters that they're supposed to be fishing, but none of them know how. So I just think that's kind of comical. I don't know what their
freaking
plan was.
Go figure. Learn on the fly, I guess.
Yeah. So they literally came over here like defenseless. They didn't have the correct seeds because it's a whole different continent. Didn't have nearly enough food. They couldn't build shelter. So almost half of them died within those first 3 months, between December and March. And it's at that time, in March, Samoset came and greeted the settlers in English, actually. And just a little bit of a backstory on Samoset. He had been, traded back and forth between Europe. And then, so he like was kidnapped, sold into slavery in Europe, lived in Europe, ended up being able to get back, was kidnapped a second time. And during that second time was when that mass, like most 90% of the population died. So he came back essentially to like all of his people being dead, which is like really, really sad. So came back, but was like living in America again, with a with his tribe. And anyway, so he knew English. So the settlers were like super shocked to find that there was a native person that knew their language. And so they ended up being able to sort of set up like, you know, trades and things like that. Well, they were super eager to trade.
Also, because the settlers weren't the first people to land in the Americas also. Yeah. Like the way
there
that
had been trades happening for like hundreds of years.
Yeah. Like the way that we also teach the story is like we discover. Yeah. You didn't like discover anything.
No. I will also note that the tensions were already starting to rise because the Pilgrims had been robbing gravesites and like stealing seeds. They had stolen like a cache of corn to help like make it through the winter. So they were already like not making a great impression in relationships with the native peoples, but they still agreed to sort of like trade. So the actual first Thanksgiving, which has been confirmed to be a historic, you know, there was some factual, it was factual in the sense that there was a feast that happened. However, it would have been like pretty different from how we would expect. So Thanksgiving would have been like this Christian religious feast, but it would have been a lot more somber and reflective. Sometimes it was like called like a day of feast, sort of like after a war or something like that. So it was usually a little bit more somber and introspective and not really like a big celebration as we would see it today. So there was this feast, and during the feast, Massasoit's men, he ended up sending 90 warriors to the feast. And so it was kind of like this threatening move of kind of like they didn't come ready to fight, but they just came with like a, hey, we could do some damage if we needed to, sort of like as a, we're kind of putting our foot down, because the natives were really, Massasoit was really unhappy with the fact that they were cutting down trees, disturbing native land.
Is this like I'm assuming like a nearby leader to where the Pilgrims were?
Yes, Massasoit was like a nearby like leader of the tribe that they were like interacting with.
Got it.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't say that super clearly. But yes, so those men, the warriors, came to the feast. It was sort of this 3-day long feast. There wasn't necessarily any like outbreaks of fighting, but there The warriors were super intrigued with the Englishmen's guns. So the Englishmen kind of did some like gun demonstrations and things like that because the warriors kind of wanted to learn how to use those because it was a different technology. Massasoit's men ended up bringing like deer and they brought like 5 deer to share. And so they kind of did share some food. They would have probably eaten deer, corn, beans, waterfowl, and squash. So that probably would have been like the totality of the feast. And there likely wouldn't have been any women. It would have just been like the men. So that's just another little fun fact. We kind of show it as sort of like all of our pictures of the first Thanksgiving, like have a lot of women and children around. That's not likely.
No women, no kids. Kids weren't allowed to eat till everybody else had eaten.
So that is kind of a rough like overview of the actuality and sort of the context of the first Thanksgiving. What's interesting is it wasn't really talked about like at all until 1841. So over, what was it, like 100 years?
Yeah,
because they landed in Plymouth. Oh, where did I put it?
It's like 16.
Yeah, 1620. 20. So it would have been, that would have been what, 200 years? Yeah, 1620 to 1840. It's fine. I can do math.
Long time.
200 years later, there was a guy named Alexander Young who had found a letter written from someone at Plymouth. One of the pilgrims at Plymouth talking about that first feast. So it mentioned things like, you know, everything that I just mentioned, the food that they ate and stuff like that. And so Alexander Young ended up like publishing a story just about that Thanksgiving. And it sparked a lot of like sort of national interest and resurgence in talking about that history. There was a woman, Sarah Josepha Hale, who actually also wrote Mary Had a Little Lamb, which is kind of fun. Huh. It originally was called Mary Had a Lamb. But she was a editor of a magazine who had a lot of influence. She took this magazine from having 5,000 copies in circulation to 500,000. Like, she was very, had a lot of influence on culture in America at that time. So she was this big proponent of wanting to take Thanksgiving and make it a national holiday. So year after year, she would write these publications saying, like, this needs to be a holiday. Like, we need something to rally behind. And, like, this was happening in Civil War time. So there was, like, kind of this need to, like, I don't know, come together and have some sort of national sense of pride. And she ended up actually befriending Lincoln's Secretary of State. And through that friendship, became friends with Lincoln himself and was like, hey, we really need this to be a holiday. And so he then agreed, yes, that should be a holiday.
So that's interesting. So I wonder, knowing, you know, obviously historically what happened in the U.S. during Lincoln's presidency and kind of contextually what was happening around, how much of the narrative that we have as Thanksgiving today is like propaganda.
Oh, like pretty much all of it. But
like putting those together, what's interesting about history sometimes is that things are happening at the same time and you like, we don't connect or overlap them. So it becomes very like, very confusing, or like you don't even recognize that that is all happening at the same time.
Yeah, so after, like, Lincoln had agreed sort of that first year, he declared it as a day of celebration, but it wasn't quite a national holiday yet. I think for the first couple years, Lincoln was like, no, let's do that again, and, like, declared it as, like, hey, on this day, on the fourth Thursday of November, we will celebrate. And it wasn't until a few years later that Congress passed it as a national holiday, but the reason was because people wanted to get their minds around this great story, quote-unquote, of the creation of our country, and it was to build primarily to build nationalism, right? Because this was happening like right in the throes of this great national distress, and they needed like some sort of like thing to rally behind, right? And so because the true story of Thanksgiving really wouldn't have been that pretty and it would not have inspired a lot of nationalism, they picked and chose the things that would make them look the best, right?
Yeah, go figure.
So that is how we got sort of to our specific narrative. It was primarily to build nationalism and to rally the country in a time of like its brokenness, but in turn ended up causing a lot of oppression, eraser, and
Because the goal in like the unifying piece of that which again also makes sense knowing even that Lincoln's goal with abolishing slavery wasn't to abolish slavery, it was to keep the country intact, right?
Yeah.
Is to elevate and to promote what feels good to white Christians at the time, right?
Right.
So it's not surprising that in the process of trying to create this unifying narrative that you're simultaneously erasing the contextual history of indigenous people.
Right. Yeah. And I think, so that idea of sort of like what makes white people feel comfortable, I read in researching for this, and I won't have time to really like go through the details of it, but I will link it because I think it was important. There was a speech that was supposed to be given at the 350-year anniversary of like the landing at Plymouth Rock. And it was supposed to be given by a Wampanoag man named Fred James, who was asked to speak at the celebration because they were like, oh, it would be really awesome if we could get a descendant from the Wampanoag tribe to come and give a speech. Mm. But they ended up pre-reading his speech before and ended up like nixing him and asked him like not to speak because the speech made them so uncomfortable because it was about the truth, like the hard realities of like what Thanksgiving truly means to Native people, right, or to a Wampanoag person who like their tribe is like was essentially decimated through like that like illness and spread of disease. So just like the harsh realities of what makes white people uncomfortable,
right?
So I'm gonna link that. I highly recommend reading it because I mean it was a really like well done speech, and I think it says something that even 350 years later we were still trying to censor, and that happened in 1970. So now we are actually at the like, I don't know if I feel like I missed it last year because 2020 was just such a whirlwind, but last year was the 400th anniversary of the landing of at like Plymouth
Rock. Wow.
Yeah, so I feel like it's very, I mean,
timely and relevant
and heartbreaking that still 400 years later we're not confronting like the true history.
Yeah. So, I mean, historically, right, there's obviously all of these components to the Thanksgiving story in and of itself that we have to learn and unlearn and relearn in order to fully grasp the magnitude of what some of these holidays that we celebrate mean. And especially as a white person, like it is very uncomfortable.
Yes.
To have these moments where you're like, oh my God, I was completely oblivious to the fact that that existed or happened or whatever. But I think it's all like part of the process of not just making ourselves, like growing ourselves to be better people. Cause I think sometimes we get to this place in the white community where we try to unlearn or relearn history so that we can be better people. And in that way, we still center ourselves around the work of unlearning and relearning.
Yes.
But truly so that we can recognize the way we go about operating in the world that we exist in. So for me, like thinking about all of this and what it means to celebrate Thanksgiving, it's a reframing of what it is that we're actually celebrating. Is there something to celebrate, or does this need to go back to being a somber holiday? What it was originally intended to be, to recognize that this is not like a day where every single person who was there had a wonderful time. Mm-hmm. You know, it started out as an intent of mourning the loss and the realities of what it meant to come to this new place, but also the implications that it had on the people who were already here.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really excellent point because, one thing I've found through this is that there is a like national day of mourning, that also takes place on Thanksgiving. And it's usually like, it started in the form of like a protest on, I think it started in the 1970. Okay, so it also happened on that 350-year anniversary of sort of the landing at Plymouth. That National Day of Mourning, I mean, I think that's really interesting because, like, for, I mean, Native people, that holiday means something totally different. And I do think it's interesting because in some of those, like, sources I was reading from, like, Indigenous communities, in the process of sort of thinking of what does it look like to re-Indigenize Thanksgiving, one thing that was discussed is that there usually was some form of, like, feast and celebration that happened in thankfulness to the harvest, like every year, sort of like in the mm-hmm. fall. So like for that community, there usually was an aspect of like celebration around that sort of feast. So in some spaces, it might look more like celebrating like the things that are happening, but in some spaces it might need to be more of a like mourning the tragedies or realities of what happened, you know. Yeah. And I think that there's always this like tension there of like Thanksgiving has always been one of my favorite holidays, but then as I learn more about the history, I'm like, should it be like, should I, what can I keep, what needs to like never happen again, like how am I being how can I be more sensitive and caring in the ways that I'm like talking about things. Like it's just, it can bring up, I think, a lot of complex emotions and realities because nothing is super clear cut. I mean, it, you know?
Yes. And as you were saying that, I have like two lines of thought that I think might meet each other in the middle somewhere, but if they don't,
we'll see where we're going.
This is a tangent on my end. So just strap in, folks. So, and like hearing all of that history and like you said, thinking about what it looks like to reapproach our relationship to this holiday, it got me thinking about conversations that I've had with people around topics like this, specifically like conversations I've had with white people in my life who feel very frustrated around this feeling that everything is bad now, right? This kind of like straw man argument that mm-hmm. like, everything is terrible and nothing is sacred. You can't have anything anymore because you're presented with really uncomfortable information yeah. around the fact that historically the people who you love, who have come from people who they love, have done some pretty terrible things.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking about, and I don't know as much about this as I would love, but just this notion in scripture of things happening to the seventh generation, right? Like comments about this will happen to you and your family and your family's family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this idea of like generational passing on, or what we now kind of talk about as like generational trauma, is how I think yeah. about that. And generational healing. And how, you know, when we talk about people being born into this for such a time as this, and all of right. these notions that like us being in this place at this point in time, in this moment in history, all is significant. It makes me think about how much more significant the work of unlearning, relearning, and reframing moments like this in history, how important that right. is to our spiritual process.
Right.
Especially if we recognize that while we frame time as a linear journey, it's not necessarily linear, that mm-hmm. everything doubles back on itself, and mm-hmm. that we are the byproduct of the decisions that people in our past have made, and the decisions that we make set a trajectory for the future. So I think part of the importance when we approach Thanksgiving this year and really getting intentional about not just, you know, throwing it completely out because
right.
we're doing it out of resentment to the fact that we're being challenged to learn something. It's, you know, taking the opportunity to recognize that we have an opportunity to do something different.
Right.
And in that same vein, I more and more find myself coming into the system of belief that the decisions that I make today matter both for me right now, the versions of me and iterations of me that will come in the future, and those that have gone before me. Like I think
yeah.
my choices impact all of those things because time is almost more like vertical than it is horizontal.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And I remember, and this is where it gets a little convoluted, but I remember in my more conservative evangelical college days, having these moments where a lot of the conversation in prayer would be like praying for suffering for the gospel,
oh,
right?
Gosh.
Right? Like yes, this yeah. prayer that you would
very
have to endure
yes.
a challenge in order to grow closer to God.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've recognized more and more is that those didn't just like go out the window, right? Like mm-hmm. God heard all of those and put them into practice. But the way I think that that suffering so often comes up specifically for the white community is in unlearning the ancestral trauma that has been placed upon yourself and the people around you because of moments in history like this that are completely
yeah.
like whitewashed and nationalized
yeah.
and colonized and all of those things. And that maybe the discomfort and the suffering that I was praying for in college really comes in the form of having to look my previously favorite holiday in the face and recognize
right.
that it's damaging and it's harmful
right.
and that there's a way to do it better. And so to me, I think all of that goes into itself. And so when we think about like, okay, so we know the real history of Thanksgiving. We know that historically in the United States, the church has been one of the biggest driving factors in harm, but it also holds the potential to be one of the biggest driving factors of good. And I play a part in all of this somehow.
Right.
I think there is value to us leaning into that discomfort, to having hard conversations around what the holiday really means, to challenging ourselves to learn something new. Right. Not for the sake of our own learning, but to be a better neighbor and to love people more fully, and to keep from perpetuating harm generations down the line. Because we're all, it's all interconnected. And even continuing my tangent on the layers of ancestral history, but even if we think about things that we don't talk about as often in church, like the celebration of the saints, communion of saints, being engaged with those that have gone before us and those are going to come after us, because it is all happening simultaneously. That God's time is different from our time because God's time is just is.
Yeah.
So all of it is relevant. We can do healing now that actually breaks generational cycles later for ourselves and for others. But that requires us to get uncomfortable and do the work, and that can feel like suffering.
Yes.
It sucks. But it's so important, because how many generations of people had to suffer at the hands of our ancestors in order to get to this place in a holiday where we're celebrating a feast that represents the mass genocide of Native people on their own homelands because we wanted somewhere else to go to not feel persecuted in our own ways.
Yes.
So it is just, you know, ongoing ramble, but I think the gist for me of what all of this means today and what it means for any holiday or any event or any moment moving forward that I get the chance to learn something that I didn't already know is that it's A, not about me. Like, taking the time to unlearn and relearn our understanding of Thanksgiving is not about us. It's about the people around us. It's about the people that have to endure us when we say things that are out of pocket. It's about the people coming after us who we're going to be teaching and educating moving forward. And it's about creating a place that looks more like heaven on earth. And it starts there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is my
Thanksgiving tangent. That was good. Pop off, Maddie. Yes. I feel like one thing that like came to mind is, yes, the idea that I feel like sometimes it can feel easier to get frustrated with the thing and so completely like throw it out.
Yeah.
Like with Thanksgiving as an example, learning about the harm that Thanksgiving can cause and having to confront the true disgusting, horrifying history of Thanksgiving, it can feel like, oh, well, we just need to like scrap it and throw it out. However, I think even in doing that, that's then erasing a lot of the harm and truth of what actually happened. So when I was in college, I took this class on slavery and its consequences up and through like modern day America, which are still very many. But in this class, I remember it was during like, I want to say this class was in like 2016. So it was right as like Black Lives Matter was sort of in its first like iterations, and during a lot of the protests around like pulling down monuments and stuff. And so in this class, we spent a lot of time talking about like all of the debates behind like, should things be torn down? Should they not? And I remember one like thing that our professor talked about, which I feel like sticks with me in a lot of these conversations we have in, like, about, around rebuilding faith, is this idea of like, if we tear down those monuments, then we lose the space to like talk about that, the actual harm of that history. So like sometimes taking those things and saying, this is the true harm of what happened. And this is the actual history, instead of the like nice flowery history we want to say around like, you know, praising this general who ended up like doing a lot of harm, you know, which I have a lot of friends in the museum industry and also talking a lot about like how to tell history, like how to retell history in a way that's like honoring the harm of what happened and like being honest about the truth of what happened instead of just like whitewashing and covering up the nasty bits. Which I think is so important. So like one of the main reasons like in this research around sort of how we can like re-indigenize Thanksgiving was starting with telling the correct history, telling what actually happened, not just like scrapping the holiday, forgetting it, ignoring, you know, doing something else instead, but like really wrestling with the truth of what happened and just being honest about it, mm-hmm. which I think is important, right? Like to really sit with that. Yeah.
I mean, even thinking about like last week, it was in a much more fun kind, or last week, last episode, in a much more fun kind of way, we're talking about the value of story.
Yeah.
And the implications of story and what that right. looks like for us as we grow to be like more holistic people mm-hmm. in the world. And this is another one of those spaces, right? Where when you tell the correct story, it changes the way that you engage, mm-hmm. not only with that moment in time and that piece of history, but the people right. who are implicated by that in a different kind of way. And I think part of us figuring out how to move forward in a world that is more like honest and equal and justice oriented and equitable is like starting, like you said, with the actual stories.
Yeah.
And moving forward towards solutions that are based out of truth, because you're never going to get to a place that is truly balanced and whole and right. healed if you're only operating out of false narratives.
Yeah.
And that exists with anything. And so even thinking about like how as Christians do we engage this holiday?
Right.
I think start with the actual story. And to me, it's just like, just sit with it. If it's your first time ever hearing about Thanksgiving in this way, sit with the reality of that, right? And then maybe next year commit to reading a book. And then maybe the next year commit to some tangible action piece. Think about what Thanksgiving looks like today even. Mm-hmm. Because now it's evolved not just from a story to one that is so deeply rooted in capitalism and consumption,
right.
That the actual like fluffy story we're given isn't even right. really relevant anymore, right? It's evolved into a beast all its own. And so addressing that, like maybe it's just like, I'm only going to shop at indigenous owned companies today,
mm-hmm.
or I'm not going to shop at all, or I'm going to choose to operate in this way. Like, I think there's small choices we can make to orient ourselves around this truth of the story, and then build from there over time so that we can continue to unpack and unwind all of the layers that are now piled upon this day and like what it means for people.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think definitely in church spaces, we need to confront the harm that was done in the name of Christianity to Native peoples. Like, to especially like, I mean, the roots of this holiday are supposed to be in this sort of like Christian holiday, but then we need to wrestle with the harm that was done and has been done in the name of God and Christianity and trying to quote unquote civilize mm-hmm. like and bring the word of God in a really, really harmful way. That needs to be addressed like in church spaces and talked about of like, we did a really bad job and how can we learn from that and do better? Mm-hmm. Cause I think there is definitely like a huge need to talk about these things and to re-indigenize and decolonize the way we think about Thanksgiving within church, right? Yeah. Like there's a lot of personal work to be done. And I think there's a lot of institutional work to be done. I have like some ways we've touched on a few of these, but just like ways and steps that we can take to begin decolonizing and re-indigenizing Thanksgiving. So telling the real story, as we already mentioned, mm-hmm. Serving locally sourced food that's like natural to your area, right? Cause like original harvest feasts and things like that would have taken place with the food that was at hand and was like, natural to your area. So serving like local, supporting local farmers markets, like buying natural food to where you are and like eating that way. Mm-hmm. Also like asking people outside of your normal circle what Thanksgiving means to them, because it might not be a happy, joyful holiday, like asking what it means and why that is. Learning about the land that you're on. We've like mentioned this before, but like looking up, and I found like a map, and then I think you've mentioned before a number that
there's,
you can text.
Yeah, I think if you Google it, there's a number you can text that will text you the communities indigenous to the land that you're on.
Yeah, I think we have that in previous show notes, so I will put that back in. But I also found a map where you can like type in either your city or your zip code, and it'll like show you the like whose land that you're on and like more about those communities. So also listening to Native perspectives, books, podcasts, mm-hmm. movies, like listening to voices that are not in your community. Oh, an easy one, the one that I saw that I was like, oh, this is very timely. We're recording this right after the Braves won the World Series. Yeah. But stop using racist mascots. So if you are in a community where there's a mascot of indigenous people, let's go ahead and like petition against that. I'm from Georgia and the Braves were our home team. I'm not a massive fan of baseball, but I already tried to like look into finding a few petitions and things like that of like, how can we change that? Because we're in it. There's been a lot of change within like local communities and things like that, but a lot of professional teams that use racist mascots still haven't been changed. So like changing those things on a professional level. And so if you're in a community where your mascot is not appropriate, let's try to figure out a way to change that.
Or even see what the relationship is between that team and that indigenous community. I forget what team it is, but there is a team that has worked out a compensation relationship with the team that they represent through their name. So the community is comfortable with that name because they receive a part of the profits every year that goes back towards that community. Like just doing some of that research, I think is also really huge.
I know with the Braves, like there has been continuous outrage by indigenous communities. So yeah, just figuring out like what that vibe is. Cause it might be that, you know, it just, it needs to be at the discretion of like those communities.
Yeah. And I think in all of this, the thing that we have to do all of the time, not just with Thanksgiving, but with pretty much everything, is reframing the way that we view the discomfort that comes with learning and unlearning. You know, if making it a spiritual practice works for you, make it a spiritual practice. Like, view it as your way of engaging in the collective, like, suffering for the betterment of the gospel. Because really, like, you being uncomfortable to unlearn something in order to be more loving to the people in the world around you and to create heaven on earth around you, like, that is, that's part of the gig. So figuring out how to operate in that way. And one of the things that I started doing that we've talked about in previous episodes, but I kind of come back to is like, if you hear something and you feel a rise in you, stop, object, like take a breath, objectively evaluate, like, how am I feeling right now? And then ask yourself why, like 3 to 5 times. So why did that upset me? Find that answer. Why do I feel that way? Find that answer. Why does that exist? Find that answer and follow that line back. And usually what happens is you realize that there's something ingrained within your space that needs the reevaluating, and it's not the thing you're being confronted with. And I think this is also part of developing a sense of empathy, which is one of the few ways we're going to get forward in learning and unlearning spaces, is being able to empathize with someone's story and adjust ourselves accordingly based off of that and learning because of it. So I think that is also like, that's something you can do all the time, is just consistently evaluate, why do I feel this way? To see what you can learn in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. If anyone out there has more resources, more like history around like Thanksgiving and ways to like better re-indigenize and decolonize, please send those our way. Like we're still like learning and reevaluating like all these things, and we want to make sure that we can also share those with other people in our community. Thank you guys so much for listening. We hope that that today you're able to sort of do some evaluation and figuring out what it is that, you know, the work that we need to do both internally and collectively to build a world that's where we're loving each other more and seeking justice and caring for our neighbors the way that God intended.
Yes. So friends, if you are listening today and you really are appreciating the conversation, you like what you hear, you want to share it with someone else, we encourage you to do that. Share this show with as many people as possible. Follow us on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, engage with us. That helps us to reach other people who might be interested in joining this community. You can also find us on Instagram at Oh God Pod. And that's where like the bulk of our updates and content and kind of engagement is happening. So follow along there. We've got some giveaways coming up. We've got some big things planned in the next year. So you want to be there.
Yes. And if you want a little bit deeper conversation, we have a Discord that is specifically for all of our patrons. So if you are interested in being a part of our Patreon, which starts as little as $1 a month, we have a lot of people in our $5 category too, which is about comparable to like a Starbucks coffee drink, per month. But that anyone in our Patreon gets access to our Discord, where we will post questions, have a little bit more conversation around each of our episodes. And, we have monthly community calls and ways mm-hmm. where we can deeper engage as a community, with one another. So yeah.
Yes. Follow along, engage with us. Thank you for listening. We are very thankful for you. And we hope that you have a great rest of your weekend.
Ooh.